Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the novels Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, Pretty Ugly, and the collection The Japanese Box and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move On Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today, that's not a salmon. Put that down. Don't give the props away too soon, Allison. I'm not thrashing around a lobster.
He just wanted to say hi.
I know. Joining us today is one of our favorite guests returning for a second time. We're always shocked and glad when people are like, I would love to do the show again. We're like, amazing. Clay McLeod Chapman, author of What Kind of Mother? What? Which we will talk about. It will make sense why we have sea creatures or creatures of a bay. Clay was last here with us for his novel Ghost Eaters. Since then, Allison and I went on like another deep dive. We also read Whisper Down the Lane, which we're going to have to cover a little bit.
We went off topic. We did not understand the assignment.
Because we both binged What Kind of Mother way too soon because we were like, I can't wait anymore. I know. Clay's on a book tour, very busy. He can't do a podcast. And I'm like, I'm reading it right now. I'm not stopping myself. And then once I did, Allison's like, well, I guess I'm going to. Mm-hmm. And so any hoops. Clay, welcome back to the show. Tell our listeners, our viewers, a little bit about you. And then a little bit about What Kind of Mother. And we don't expect you to remember that much about Whisper Down the Lane.
Because we'll tell you what happened.
We'll tell you what happened because it's seared in our brains.
It's so funny. I had that moment where before clicking on, I was like, oh man, do I remember anything about Whisper Down the Lane? Do I remember anything about What Kind of Mother at this point?
No, it's okay.
It's all a blur. It's all a briny blur. Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me back. This is I'm always really touched that there's like a second invite because you never know, right? There's a moment where it's like, oh, okay, I'll probably never talk.
Yeah, I'll never talk to you again. No, so last time you were here, Clay, we were like, it's okay to dress up weird. Sometimes we dress up weird because we had like sheets over our heads for Ghost Eaters. And you were like wearing a wizard's hat.
Well, the assignment was to wear witchery. You told me I had to like come in, you know, witch garb. And
it was good.
We had a hat. So I'm woefully underdressed.
We don't know how to dress for either of these books. Like, okay, actually I'm dressed just fine because What Kind of Mother, this is kind of my normal mom wear. I'm cold. Yeah. I'm glad I'm not in my hoodie. That's pretty much
I tried to go a little bit satanic panic.
You do look satanic panic.
With like a shredded t-shirt, sweater. But I realized my like weird 80s, 90s gothy punk satanic panic look I already wore when Paul Tremblay was on for Pallbearers Club. And I'm like, I can't wear the same outfit and be like, now it's satanic panic.
You just have that look, the satanic panic look.
I have a lot of props for that.
The panic is a vibe. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the clothes, but it's the person, not the clothes. You gotta bring the panic vibe.
That is my entire personality. I should have just brought my anti-anxiety medication. Like, look, I am panicked.
Oh man,
that is a thing.
I feel like for the non-video people, I need to, or maybe just the video people. Maybe I just need to come clean and confess that I'm in kind of like winter Cro-Mag phase. Like that weird, like I'm looking at myself on this video screen and suddenly I'm like, oh, like someone needs to get a haircut or a trim.
No, Clay, I don't want to hear this, but you look hot.
You look fine. Hot.
Oh, you say that to all the guests. I'm on to you.
Only the tall ones.
I don't know. Mr. Tremblay
have been talking, and we know what goes on.
No, and Abby just says Clay looks fabulous. And she doesn't say that to just anyone.
She doesn't say. Oh, now this is going to turn into like, all right, people who are watching. This is
this is not that kind of podcast. I take it off? Do I take what? No.
Like, remember the time we did the podcast in a bikini, Allison?
That was for May Cobb, of all people. It wasn't even a male author. May was just laughing at us. And then I'm like, I'm putting my shirt back on, Jennifer. We just match the covers sometimes. And other times, like, I bring food. Last time, I was eating mushrooms through yours. And this time, I have some crab to eat. I wanted, like, actual crab legs. Yes. They're, like, $30 a pound. So I have, like, the fake kind. And this has cocktail sauce. It's quite
man,
good.
Look at that.
So I have a lot of irrational fears. Mm-hmm. Again, I inhabit the panic of really it. Well. I embrace it. So I've had a lifelong fear of mushrooms, and you were here for Ghost Eaters, and I was just petrified. And I really am so scared of crabs.
Why? There have been,
it's the sideways walking, because you think they're going to walk right at you, but then you can't predict them. Their eyes go in opposite directions. My husband taunts me when we're at the beach. If he finds like an empty crab shell, he'll like casually like put his arm around me. And I think it's like a romantic moment. Yes, and then it's like, aww, there's a crab on me.
Oh, that's so sweet and creepy.
It's so sweet. So yeah, Clay, you do not look like a Cro-Magnon man.
You don't. No.
For people who are just listening, he doesn't.
I'll take it. More crustaceous, maybe.
Today. That's on point, though.
That's thematically acceptable.
I'm trying.
Talk to us about what you remember about What Kind of Mother.
Yeah, do we, I mean,
crabs and palm reading.
Crabs are creepy. There's just no two ways about it. like, there's just this moment where you kind of acknowledge, like, why? Like, of all the things that we eat in this world, like, why am I putting this into my mouth?
I just want to know, who was the first person who saw that creepy little mother clucker sideways walking and was like, that looks delicious? I mean, I'm glad he's looking at me with one eye and the other eye is like looking out to see.
The only explanation is literally they saw some animal eating it and went, that otter. Yeah. The otter looks like it's having a good time. I want that too. And the otter's sitting there with its little hands and it's using a shell or a rock to break something else open. Because it uses tools. We wouldn't have figured that out. The otters are way smarter than we are.
Yeah. It kind of defies. I mean, they're like bugs of the sea. Yep. They're like little, they're like big insects we just eat. And like, if someone was like, hey, you want a spider? Or like, hey.
No, thank you.
You want a cricket? I'd just be like, heck no. And I mean, like, I know chocolate-covered grasshoppers. Like, I know that in the spectrum of cuisine that
it's folks, somewhere on there.
People eat their protein. You know, you got to get it somehow. But like, at the end of the day, when you're just like looking at it and you're just like this little thing with like feelers and filaments and segments. And
these are the feelers. Like, feelers.
Look, okay, so my sister has probably still not forgiven me for this, and this happened probably 16 or 17 years ago now. We had gone out to dinner for my birthday with my parents, and we were at a cuisine place, Cajun, I think, primarily, and my sister ordered crawfish, and I happened to call them what they call them in New Orleans, which is mud bugs, and my sister, like, her face went green, and she couldn't eat anymore, and I... You know,
is she a vegetarian now?
She's not. She was vegetarian when I was a vegetarian, but she is a little bit, I had no idea. And I felt so bad. Like and then I couldn't eat because I felt bad that she wasn't eating. I ruined my own birthday dinner by calling them mudbugs, but that is what they are called because that is what they are.
Mudbugs.
Mudbugs.
Makes sense.
That's the sequel to What Kind of Mother? What kind of mud bug are you?
You mud bugger.
Oh, you dirty mud bugger.
You mudder buggers.
Mudder bugger.
Take that, YouTube. You can't censor us.
Yeah, because we're not even using words honestly, at this point. It's just gibberish, and that's fine.
Yeah, what is the book? The book is, What Kind of Mother is...
Would you say it's folk horror? folk horror?
I mean, I personally, I love to call it kind of like Southern Gothic folk.
Yes.
You know, like a little bit of like, you know, like for me, like I
we're jamming now.
All about the vibes, man. We're vibing. I mean, I grew up down south. I grew up in Virginia. I grew up in this kind of area where the book itself takes place, which is Chesapeake Bay, Eastern Shore. You know, I have family who live there to this day. I was there for the holidays. I wrote a lot of the book while staring out at the Piankatank River, so it was very inspirational. I have eaten countless crabs over.
They're going to come and get you one of these days.
They will.
Well, yeah. I mean, like my family, they're crabbers. Like they're not commercial fishermen, but they are.
They're just crabbers as a hobby.
Or personality. They're just
personality. Because I'm like, I've been called a crabber as well, but.
It's this kind of family tradition where like each year, I mean like the crabbing season is from, it's every month that has a letter R. No, every, it's, what is it? It's every month that does not have a letter R in it. So what is that?
May, June, July, August.
Like that is your crab season. And basically.
That took so much concentration.
I know. I'm like, I don't know the names of the months. Hold on.
I know. I'm still mystified going, doesn't August have an R? No.
I know. We're like, wait. And then how many R's are in February?
But every year, I mean, like my family just like rakes that river for its crabs, its crustaceans.
So you've done this or other people you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is like, I mean, I've donned the hip waders, I've chicken necked, I don't know what that is.
Chicken necked. I'm like, you can't
even like. I chicken tried to look so knowledgeable, like I was Barbara Walters.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Just when you just like that, oh, yeah.
Mm, chicken necking.
Oh, yes. Oh.
I use moisturizer to stop that.
That's turkey necking.
Same thing.
Chicken neck is when you have, usually it's like a broomstick without the broom, like a sawed-off broomstick. Okay. You tie off a string at the end of the broomstick. You don't even need the stick. You could just have a string. But at one end of the string, you have to have a piece of chicken that you tie the chicken.
Oh, the chicken's the bait.
And, okay. Yeah, the chicken's the bait.
I'm getting it now.
And then you drop you drop the string into the water, and then you just let it dangle. You let it dangle, and then you know if you're patient, like something will crab and start tugging on that chicken neck, and then you just start pulling that string in, and then swoop up with a net, and you got yourself a crab.
And then once you have this crab, you scream and then cry and then kill it. Yeah, and then just, you eat it. Yeah. You just eat it right away.
You just do.
Don't kill the crab right away, though, do you? The crabs just come with you till you're ready.
Oh my God. It's
like, still hanging out.
It is so cruel. I mean, you steam them. So basically, you're just like putting all of these crabs in a wicker bat, like a laundry basket.
And then you boil them alive.
This is why I'm a vegetarian.
That is my reason, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You put them in a pot, you know, you sprinkle in your Old Bay.
You
steam them up, and then, you know, they're alive when they're in, and you can kind of hear the click.
Why are you killing me? I'll come back someday and inhabit some like sort of, yeah. Mm.
I'll haunt you
in a way. I don't want to do any spoilers for what kind of mother, but like,
well, and honestly, like
there was some revenge going on.
I don't have any real crab phobia, but having read the drawing of the three by Stephen King, I see crabs and I just go, dadachuk, dadachuk. And I'm like, they're going to come get me anyway. But those are specific crabs, not just like average crabs. And they're big and I think venomous. And most crabs, last I checked, are not either of those things. So I'm not generally worried about them, but it's not something I usually order. And when I get it, it's like a crab cake. Like it's so not.
Yeah, it's like deep fried.
Made of fish. This isn't even real crab. But I don't really ever get like, hey, here's a crab. And it's like looking at you. Cause I don't think I could eat something where it's like little eyes are still like, ha.
So many years ago, I went to the Ohio State Fair with my now husband and we won a hermit crab.
Oh, so it's a pet.
So it was a pet. And I was like, I'm so scared of crabs, but I can't not have this. We were trying to win an iguana. Obviously, it's a scam. Yeah, it's a scam. We got a hermit crab. And then immediately I'm like, okay, we have this crab. I read about crabs more, especially hermit crabs. They're very social. You need many hermit crabs. So I'm like,
great.
This one crab is now going to be multiple crabs. So then we had to go to the pet store, buy a bunch of crabs, get a habitat.
Oh my God.
Named it Downton Crabby.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then I became obsessed with these hermit crabs. We named them like all the characters of the show. Edith was my favorite, and she was the homeliest crab we had. And I kept trying to get her to change into a beautiful shell.
How can you judge how homely a crab? Oh, you mean the shell?
The shell was bad.
Really see their face.
The shell was bad. And then like some of the bigger hermit crabs, we just named them pieces of furniture. We were like, "You're oak cabinet. You are dining room table. You are."
I feel like what you're basically saying: these crabs are not long for this world. If you're not giving them, if you're not humanizing them, if it's not like little Timmy or
Edith lasted the longest, and she finally changed shells into a beautiful shell, and I was like, I love you, Edith.
And then she died.
It was like Emily Bronte wrote this.
She just
farewell, cruel world.
I know.
I sink into my shell.
You'll just find my little shriveled up body. Like, and they also tunnel, so I had to like dig them out of the crab-a-tat, and I'm like, that one hasn't moved in 5 days.
You are probably not still in there, are you? That's very sad.
Anyhoops, that was my crab story, and this was me getting over my fear, and then after Edith died, like my fear of crabs doubled down immediately. Aww. It was like, they know I failed them. As a mom.
I'm gonna come get you. What kind of mother? What kind of
what
mother?
What kind of mother was I?
Babies.
So
babies.
So yeah, Clay, thanks for emotionally scarring me and bringing up all my Downton Crabby memories.
I can only imagine anyone who is listening to this right now and is like, so what is this book about?
This book.
I know, because we haven't even gone into the whole palm reader part of it.
Because here's the thing, like, I was seeing all these things and I knew, I'm like, oh, well, of course I'm going to read the book, but I figured I like to read books close to what I know we're having a guest on so that my brain holds on at least some of the plot and facts, because otherwise it's like, I don't know what happened. And I was seeing all these reviews and all the little crabs everywhere. I'm like, what the?
And I was afraid it was going to get spoiled for me before I read it.
But it didn't, because it just goes in such unexpected directions and all this stuff. I mean, people could be putting a lot of other things. They could put little hands. They could be doing little neon signs. They could be doing guitars. There's so many things. And this, and even as you're reading it, and then you have multiple points of view.
You could do kidnapping posters, missing children.
Seriously, there's
just
so much
sunsets
going on
over the bay.
I feel like the crab is just a little teaser going, ha, that
a little fishing shack.
Like, what the heck is going on here? There's hermit crabs? Not Edith? No,
there's not human crabs. There's not, maybe there is.
There's nobody named Edith in
there's
this
nobody
book.
Named Edith. So I did have like a question about, so your main character is a palm reader, which I love so much, and she believes / doesn't believe she has this ability.
I love that. She's like,
do I? I don't think I do.
This was an accident.
Yeah. So where did that idea come from? Is your mom a palm reader?
No.
Have you ever been a fake palm reader?
I'm going to cop to this and admit that I'm pretty agnostic when it comes to palm readings and tarot. It's not so much that I don't believe as much as that I have yet to believe. Like, if someone was to kind of say, like, here you go, I'm so ready to believe.
I love that. Well, I love that because weirdly, so I totally believe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in my 20s, I worked for a psychic entertainer and my job was fake palm reading and fake tarot card reading. And I believe in it. And I was still like
faking it.
Yeah.
Well, and Regina adds, and Regina's tarot and witchcraft adds, the tarot reader in chat leans forward with steepled fingers. So Regina, I'll be you. So are you steepled like this?
I am. For me, in terms of Maddie, her character, I wanted her to kind of have a craft that was very kind of hand oriented. But like that, I want to stop short, like just a hair short of calling her a con artist or...
She's not.
But she has kind of acknowledged that there is a way in which that she kind of embraces the people who come to her, her clientele. Well, yeah. And that there's a certain kind of transaction that there's something kind of either therapeutic or cathartic or
I think if you're getting your palm read at a farmer's market or a flea market or at like a tourist attraction, you don't want the nitty gritty. You want a good $10 palm reading that's going to say something nice about your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like she's just like a good reader of people.
Yes.
She's not reading this. She's reading this.
But that she's kind of like created almost like her own kind of spin on it, her own art form of it, where it's like, I see, like, you know, her clientele, they don't want rings of Saturn or Sagittarius rising. They want the river. They want the bay. They want that life. So when she's looking at, and it's very like entrenched into the text where it's like, she sees, when she's looking at the creases in your hand, she sees rivers. She sees creek. She actually even sees like, you know, the tributaries of that particular.
I see them.
And I don't know. Like, I felt like, well, okay. So your question was, where did that come from? And I'm going to admit that the idea came about because I am a vague true crime person. Like I don't.
I'm so sorry. I'm like,
she's like, are we best friends now?
Well, I feel like I have a complicated relationship with true crime. I think everybody should have a complicated relationship.
Yeah.
Like, don't commit them.
Don't commit them. And also, there is a point in any, like, when you're watching true crime documentaries or things where you're like, oh my God, awesome. And then you have to take a beat and go, no.
Yeah. No.
Nope, that was somebody's family.
Yeah. I think there's always that you always have to kind of embrace the, like, why am I doing this? Why am I reading this or watching this or engaging with this? Because you are basically kind of absorbing the story of someone's life, and it's a narrative of their life. So how much of it is the actual fact versus some kind of structured narrative? Like it's complicated. But in that, saying all that, one of the things that I really got fascinated about was this idea that in certain books that I was reading, true crime books or kind of nonfiction accounts, there would occasionally be a person, an individual who would come into the sheriff's department and basically be like, yes, that would be like, I am a psychic. I know where the body is. I know where the missing person is. Yeah. I can help you. And that they themselves kind of ingratiate themselves into the process, that they either latch on to it or adhere to it or kind of parallel it, but they involve themselves. And whether the law embraces it or rejects it, like there is this kind of individual, you know, who, you know, is like, I have visions and I can see where this is. And like, I just thought it'd be really fascinating to kind of write a story about someone who may or may not have some sort of kind of psychic ability, or, you know, who kind of like at least cops to the idea that it's like, I don't really, you know, like it's not this, but it's a little bit more like this. But taking the person who is either a non-psychic or a skeptic, and have that person actually have
the ability to
like an epiphany, like a thing.
Like, oh crap, can I solve this case?
Yeah.
Me?
I mean, like, I just wanted to kind of like navigate that character, that person, that individual, and you know, have it lead down its own kind of path. And that was, you know, I just started kind of imbibing a lot of, you know, there are kind of accounts, historical accounts, nonfiction accounts, true crime accounts. Like there are book, like oodles of books written about like, I'm a psychic and I help the police find this missing person or find the body with it. Like, and that stuff just kind of, it just fascinates me.
I mean, Maddie was a great character.
I loved her.
I loved her so much. I'm just like, damn, I want to play Maddie in a movie. a weird one-woman show about Maddie where I'm doing fake.
I want to beat up her ex-husband.
I want to beat up her ex-husband.
Or baby daddy.
Yeah. So the story starts, obviously, it started in your head with Maddie, or did it start with Crab, something is going to happen? Oh, or did the crabs just...
Crabs.
And we don't... Like, at what point were you like, oh, shoot... I just added crabs into this.
I mean, it's
what is happening now.
I mean, it happened. The crabs happened much later in the process.
Just showed up and like,
I love that.
Yeah. Ew. It's shrimp, but whatever.
it was kind of amazing how like it would like. I have to tread carefully. Because I don't want to get into like spoilery territory.
Nope.
Don't do it.
And this is a tough one to talk about, but there is a certain kind of pivot. There are a couple of pivots, but there's like the latter half of the book was enriched the second I started thinking, oh, crabs.
I can see that.
Where yeah. Prior to that crustaceous epiphany.
The crustaceous epiphany. Other title of the book.
There was I pitched the book I pitched was basically like I don't know if I can say the word, like there's a certain kind of paranormal thing that is something out there in this world that people either do or do not believe in. And I pitched this book as that was the
that thing that concept.
That was where they were going. That's where the story was going.
Okay.
And as I started writing it and in the revision process, like probably like the kind of second or third draft, I kind of was getting not bored, but like the kind of inactivity of this kind of supernatural paranormal, like let's just call it a ghost. It's not a ghost, but like I'm gonna call it a ghost, like just for the sake of like having to
the sake of no spoilers, but like being
it's a placeholder word. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this ghost is really boring. Like this ghost isn't really
boring. Oh my god, I hate this ghost so much. Yeah, I wish this ghost was not here.
Yeah, I mean, the ghost was basically just like, ooh, I'm a ghost. You know, like, it was like, blah, blah, blah. This ghost needs to do something. This ghost needs to
I had like a sheet that I could throw over my head to be like, ooh, I'm a ghost, like Scooby-Doo style.
But then I started feeling like, okay, well, what is, then I started kind of leaning into this idea of like what I feel like folk, like Southern Gothic folk
Southern horror. Southern Gothic, like, that's where that comes.
What does Southern Gothic folk horror mean? And like, you know, Southern Gothic, it's like, okay, the region itself is a character. Who are these characters? Well, they are fishermen. They live off of the land. They live off the water. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, baby daddy, or at least one of the baby daddies.
There's a lot of baby daddies
in this book.
I mean, well, it's called What Kind of Mother? So obviously there's a lot of familial things going on.
And I want to talk about the mother, but finish. What you were saying about like the baby daddy.
So Henry is a commercial, he's a crabber. So it's just like, oh, well, if dad is a crabber, then all of a there sudden it was go. Just like, it started just kind of like, and like, I just kind of leaned into the world of crabbing. And he was always a crabber. He was always going to be a fisherman. He was always going to be like that. But then like, all of a sudden it like the enrichment of the ghost, the world, like the kind of character of the ghost, the personality of the ghost, like all of that kind of like filled itself out in like probably like a third or fourth draft of the book. And I was like, oh my
gosh. Wow.
I mean, that process, I feel like that's how, like, there's so many people we talk to that are like, oh, I wrote the entire book and then threw it in the garbage and then started over, or at like 60,000 words went, oh, that's not what this is about. I'm usually at like 35 to 40,000 words before I'm like, oh wait, I gotta go back to the beginning and add in something.
Plot.
No, that's plot comes.
Oh, I never.
Maybe never. Maybe never. Sometimes, and that is my poor agent is like, I know.
This is what we're working on with you. With
I know.
No, I was gonna ask about like the mom factor because okay, first off, it's the title. So I was always like one eyebrow up going, "What is this mother doing?" But there are, as you point out, multiple daddies. There's also multiple mom characters, and I was like so intrigued by certain things and waiting to see, like there were so many times, I don't want to say red herring or shrimp.
Shrimp herring. Shrimp or herring. Just a herring.
Just a herring.
Just a herring at this point.
But just like, there were so many points of intrigue there that I'm like, what is happening here? And what is this really about? That the way that you told the story, because of the multiple points of view, it just kept peeling back layers. And like, I can't say certain things because I don't want to spoil stuff. So I'll have to wait till afterwards. So I'm like, I thought it was going to be, and then I was like, nope, nope, turn left. And that was like, this book is such a fun ride because you're going in one direction and then it's veering off in one direction, then veering off in another direction. And when you finally end up in the end, you kind of look around going, how the hell did I get here?
Right.
Well, and it makes sense, but
it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. So like, again, why Allison and I read the book early was we were seeing all these like, what the F? This is the most effed up book I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, what is happening? So I'm like, all right, I'm going to read it. I'm diving in. And again, like the first half, I'm like, this isn't that weird. Yeah. It's just, oh, is it because she's a palm reader? Yeah. That's not weird. That's
strange.
I'm like, this is just, you know.
Southern, that's racist.
Southern, that's racist. No, it's fine. What do you have against Virginia, people?
Yeah.
And then you do get to the point where you're like, oh, that is a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And then it's getting weird.
And then you're like,
I mean, I honestly didn't.
You didn't think it was that weird?
To be that weird. Like, honestly, so a couple of things. Just to answer your first question, Allison, or your first comment about what kind of mother. For the longest time, the book was called Peeler.
And no.
Peeler.
Okay, you have to have like the Old Bay as the cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blue, with like a red stripe at top and just a Peeler in big letters. Like,
I mean, here's the thing. Like,
I just freaked out Jennifer too much. She can't.
I took my headphones out. I'm like, oh, goodbye. Goodbye.
Oh, I guess it's over.
I'll see you next week.
It's more traumatic.
For me, like, okay, this book had, like, I'm terrible with titles. I have yet to come up with the title of my own books for, like, books now. Millions of books. So this one had, this one was actually, like, surprisingly few titles. There were three. And it started off as Missing Person.
Because, oh, gosh.
Which is pretty
placeholder-y. So Anne Rule of you.
Yeah. But the whole point was, like, this book is going to be a Nicholas Sparks novel that like gets really, really creepy and really like it starts off
it's the Notebook meets like, you know, the most horrifying crab monster ever.
Yeah. Regina says, having worked at a seafood counter, I feel like this is a spoiler. I guess it's the Peeler title.
I mean, for me, I mean, okay, so for those who the uninitiated, a peeler is a crab term, a seafood term for a crustacean, mainly crabs, that are in the process of molting. They peel off their outer skin.
And like peeling shrimp.
And then they like become soft shells. And that's when they're like very yummy, yummy, yummy.
Yes.
But there's the molting phase, the kind of shedding of the skin.
Oh my God. I can't handle this.
And for the, I mean like, you know, it's weird because like for me.
Yes, it's weird, period. What? You can just.
No, but like a title.
We're
like, crab. Like the title for me in writing the book is always kind of like, this is the theme. This is like, this is the vibe of the book. Mm-hmm. And when the book became Peeler, like it was Missing Persons for months, Missing Person. And it was like, ooh.
Is that when it was about the boring ghost, though?
Yeah. It was totally like a mystery. Ooh. It was like, what's going on? Like, ooh.
Is that a ghost child? Oh.
And the book was just like, it was really front heavy, where like we talk about the first half of the book, like the first half of the book went on and on.
Was the entire book.
That was like so much of the book. And then Peeler came in and I was like, aha, this is what the book is. And then like the book like clicked in this way. And then I like for the longest time, for the long, like the majority of the process of writing this book, it was called Peeler. And I was like, this is what the book is. But then my editor was like,
no. Do you want people to buy the book?
Exactly.
People still will.
Oh my God. They were like, we've had some conversations with
sales, marketing and sales. Marketing.
And they're like, Peeler's a little bit, there was a word. It wasn't off-putting, but it was like, maybe confusing, or like they're basically like, we're trying to wrap our head around Peeler.
And they're like that even your voice went up an octave when you're like, oh, we're trying to wrap our head around the
I get it. I totally get it.
I had to take my headphones out when you said Peeler.
Yeah. But they suggested what kind of mother. And I was like, oh, okay. Like there's always that moment, that getting to know you moment of a new title where you're just
and you're like,
the book. Huh. And
is that what you think it's about?
But what I like about What Kind of Mother is that, I mean, for starters, it's like an all purpose, like I feel like it's one of those titles that like you hear it and it has, it can be, you can say it in a myriad of ways. Like it's a question, it's an accusation.
It's an accusation.
A rebuttal. Like, you know, like it's like.
But it's also a self filled with self doubt. Like what kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I said it in all of the ways, I think, while reading this book. I'm like.
Well, that's the fun
and
part.
And then it was like, well, what kind of mother would have produced that? Is there something we don't know?
But I love that. I love that it has the variations and permutations and evolutions of, and so that's how I get behind the title, What Kind of Mother. That's my kind of like, that's that. I totally forgot what we were talking outside on the title, but that like,
I don't know, but Regina can taste the old bay.
If Regina can taste the old bay, the show is on point. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to segue a little bit just because I have a prop and I wanted, and Alice and I do want to talk about Whisper Down the Lane a little bit. You were talking about true crime earlier and your fascination with it and my fascination, everybody's fascination with it. So Whisper Down the Lane is, I bought it because I heard the word Satanic Panic. I know your work and I'm like, I'm going to love it no matter what it is. And then once I realized it was like based on the McMartin preschool trials, I was like, oh no, I was obsessed with that for so long. And the idea of like imprinted memories. Aww. And so I loved it. Anyways, here's my Satanic Panic prop. My pentagram.
Turn it on. Can you turn it on, Jennifer?
I can turn it on. So this is a part of my decor in my home.
Oh my God, it lights up?
It lights up. I'm going to try to do a Bookstagram thing.
Don't get it caught in your hair.
I know, that would be terrible. Oh, it's because I have it backwards.
There you go.
Yay. Ooh, so satanic. So panicky. This was our bonus book that we read by you.
And that was the one I immediately told my husband, who is an elementary school teacher, you are never allowed to read this because he'll just never sleep again because just yikes and so much yikes. Just no.
This is giving me life. I love it.
I always assume that you're either near the same age that Allison and I are.
Yes.
Yes. So 30. 28. Yes. How did you do all this historical research? So were you child of the 80s at some point? Were you aware of the like the whole thing of like, you're gonna Smurfs get kidnapped at any moment.
He-Man is evil.
He-Man's evil. Smurfs like, are evil. You talked about Cabbage Patch Kids in a way in this book that now I'll never see them in the same way again. Yeah. So thank you.
Cabbages, anything else you care to ruin today?
That all that stuff is true. I mean, true.
I
air quote true because
you're like, it's true. I'm scared of Cabbage Patch dolls.
I mean, people within the kind of 80s, I was born in the 70s, raised in the 80s. So like I was of that Spielbergian generation that like rode their
That's
bike.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Riding your bike, rescuing an alien in the woods.
But that, like, the kind of crew of kids kind of running through the neighborhood on their Schwinns. Mm-hmm. Like, I had that kind of lens flare childhood, you know? Like, that was, and a part of that was beware of the van with no windows, stranger danger, you know, don't take
candy. Did you have the password? Like if someone comes to pick you up and it's not your parent, they have to have this.
Absolutely.
I love that we had a password, yet during summer my parents would just be like, I could leave the house at dawn and I didn't have to come home until the streetlights went out. But if somebody tried to pick me up from school, I would have to be like, Oklahoma, you know,
or whatever. That's the cognitive dissonance. That's the like, you know, you're skinning your knees, you know, because the whole day
you're
is just
halfway
like,
up a tree, three houses down from your closest neighbor, and your parents are like, that's fine.
Yeah. I remember a bunch of us kids went to go see Beetlejuice. We had to ride our bikes. I didn't have a bike. I had a scooter. We had to ride our bikes miles and miles. I fell down a hill, my entire leg, like ripped off, covered in blood. We're like, we're still going to Beetlejuice. My friend got hit by a car in the parking lot at the movie theater. Not badly, but she's like, I'm fine.
All don't want to miss movie.
Up, bruised, and we still went to the movie, came home, and I had to like make up a story of like, I know it just happened in our driveway.
Amazing. So yes, to answer your question, it wasn't so much that I was aware of the satanic panic as much as it was, I was aware of evil all around me, because that's what parents believe. Like they're like, you know, it's, you know, don't, you can't watch that because X, Y, and Z. You can't play with that because, you know, A, B, C. And it's so silly now because like what sank in is like, huh? Like what?
Like I'm so confused. And this is why I feel like everybody in our generation and like roughly our age group, we're all like horror, speculative, sci-fi, fantasy people who are like, just make it terrible.
Yeah.
I want it now. I know.
But I remember when I was much, much older and first kind of reading about the McMartin preschool trial, which I can't remember when I first heard of that, but the fact that it like started in the 80s and went on for a decade, that trial, you know, over 10 years, and they still found zero evidence and it was legally exonerated, but in the view of public, you know, the public eye.
Everybody's like, lives are ruined.
Everyone. The kids, the adults. And, you know, so Allison and I were, you know, discussing Whisper Down the Lane before, like this morning, like frantically texting each other. And we were like, the scariest part of this, I mean, it is everything. Everything is scary. But I said, I've always had this deep fear of being wrongly accused of something. Yeah. And Allison said, you can't prove, like, you can't prove when nothing happened. Like if it doesn't exist.
You can't prove a non-event. You can't unprove something that didn't happen. And I, you know, I grew up both, you know, I'm married to a teacher. My mother was a librarian. And also
and Allison, you are a lawyer.
Lawyer. Still technically am. But
technically you're still a lawyer.
But I mean, you also saw it because the other place this happens a lot is in church things and like camp situations. And I've worked for the Boy Scouts. And so much of the training I went through was all about preventing things like this from ever happening, like too deep leadership. So you're never alone with kids. So you not just to protect the kids, but to protect yourself from ever being in that kind of like really awful position. But I also knew pastors who like a young, good looking pastor, girls like them. And if they don't like them back, then the girl makes an accusation and they lose their job. And it's just like, it's a little different than when it's a kindergartner. And I cannot get my brain around the fact that that Sean is a kindergartner through this. I'm like, I have a second grader as my youngest, and he is not a, he's not the most reputable child.
You're like, never trust my child if he tells you a story. This?
Oh God, can you imagine?
Like, seriously, and even just all of the things that work through the story in terms of who's saying what and why they're saying what they're saying and who they're trying to please and what their motives are. Even that was like just mind blowing for so much of it, because I felt so bad for this little kid.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't a bad little kid. It wasn't like, oh, you awful little child, I need to beat you.
He wasn't the bad seed.
Yeah. It wasn't.
It wasn't that trope.
Not this trope.
The kind of core conceit behind the book, the kind of like driving question was like, because I, in the reading and watching that I did, what I found really kind of interesting was that you could never find any interviews. There have been some since, but like it was rare, if impossible, to find any follow-up with any of the children, the original students from the McMartin preschool trial, that like whoever those kids were then, there was no
what became of them.
Yeah. And there have been now, I found a few, but like for the most part, those people just disappeared from the public view.
Yeah.
And I just found that really, really fascinating. And I had that this question of like, what if one of those children, like you have a student who is compelled to tell a little white lie, coerced, coached, however you want to phrase it, they are basically kind of put in the position of telling a fib, and that fib gets away from them and avalanches into what is in essence the satanic panic. What if that lie comes back to haunt them, to like, you know,
like I am like right now, like chills are all over my body. I'm like, I hate that so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing it. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Like, Whisper Down the Lane was like everything. I'm just like, uh-oh. Without it being like, yes, I think everybody has a fear of being wrongly accused of something. So it's not like my irrational fear of crabs or mushrooms. These are my real fears.
Yeah.
This is why I take buciparone twice a day. Like, I think it's because of the growing up in the 80s. They're like, oh, you have to be scared of everything.
I mean, we are living in very charged times. And like, you know, there's a certain kind of level of accountability for the things that we say and do, mm-hmm. which is good. It is interesting how, like, I don't know, like it's, yeah, like we're, I'm triple guessing myself. Every interview, I'm like, should I say that? I shouldn't say that. Should I say that? I just said that. It's like
the number of times I text Jennifer after a show, I'm like, should I have said this? Was that too far? Was that inappropriate? Did I offend somebody by saying
it? I know, like, no, I do it too. Like, I was like so silly. I'm just like, don't bring your pentagram onto the show, Jennifer, and say that it's in your house all the time, hanging on your wall. They're they're gonna make you. And I was like, uh-oh.
But I do think what is really astounding is that if, you know, in this today, like today, we can talk about the satanic panic, you know, of a moment in American history. And you know, it wasn't just America. Like, I mean, it happened everywhere. It has happened everywhere in its own kind of versions, like in the UK and, you know, like Ireland. But you can talk to someone and they'll be like, that never happened. There's just no way that somebody believed that. Oh, like
there's West a Memphis ball. 3. Like,
yeah, but that's the thing. It's cyclical. It happens. I mean, like every year, there's like a little satanic panic that kind of bubbles up, and you know, we don't hear about them all, or they don't.
Well,
make
here I think ripple. Now they're kind of, and I'm gonna try to be like as. The only way to say this, they're kind of like roped into the QAnon political,
yeah,
high Hollywood is a cabal of people who
the lizard people,
the lizard people, or the, you know, they're feeding off childhood panic as a drug, and the only way they can get that drug is by and I'm like, but it's that's the satanic panic, except now it's more high tech because it is, because we are more high tech.
That, and the thing is, unfortunately, there are evil things that happen in this world, and people want to ascribe something to it rather than just these people, or even worse, like, well, not worse, but just when you see these stories in the news where kids did something because, you know, Slender Man told them to, and it's like, that's not the satanic panic, but it's like satanic panic adjacent.
It's creepy pasta panic. It just has it doesn't rhyme. So it's never going to have like bumper stickers.
It's not going to be on my shirt.
It couldn't be like a punk band's name. Like creepy pasta panic. No.
Creepy pasta panic though. That's.
I'm like, actually no, that's I feel like that would be a great anthology book. Somebody get on that.
Okay, Regina has a question. Did you guys hear about the metaphysical shop in Hanover, PA? I only know Snyder's of Hanover. They make pretzels. This was a handful of months ago. Someone reported them for providing tarot, and the police temporarily shut it down because of an old town ordinance against tarot. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's probably still laws on the books in a lot of places based on, like, the Old Testament thing that says, suffer not a witch to live. So there's probably a lot of old ordinances based on stuff like that. I'm not super shocked.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked.
I mean, it never goes away. It just kind of evolves into whatever the kind of the technologies that are at play. So like, I think with social media, it accelerates the panic to such a degree that like you can have a kind of almost like kind of a cyclical flare out of like, oh, today we're going to talk about Little Nas X and like, you know,
oh yeah, and like he making everybody worship Satan because of high heels and like drinking fake blood on stage. It's like the TikTok of it all. Like how long, if you have a viral TikTok that lasts, what, I don't know, I'm old, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, how long does a viral TikTok last? And these are our little mini panics.
We just burn through them so fast. We chew through our panic and then we move on to the next one. But yeah, it's pretty wild. It's a wild world we're living in.
This has gotten really uplifting.
That's right.
Just like Clay's books that are feeling good and being a teacher and teaching.
Being a teacher and teaching and being a mom and crabbing.
I mean, I think maybe my favorite part of Whisper Down the Lane is somebody basically saying, you can have this space, just clean out my garage. I love that idea. And I'm
trying, oh my God, I would give anybody a space if they could clean out my garage. Like,
tell my middle child, you can make this your art studio, just clean all of it out. I don't think it's gonna work. It's just 10.
That was the true fiction in it.
Yes.
Everything like, else was to
clean out a garage.
That was the one part I didn't believe.
Across the room. You're like, lies. Oh, lies.
Yeah. That is lies. Nobody will clean out my garage. So we've got to kind of wrap this up. Clay, I just went and bought another one of your books that I hadn't read. I just bought The Remaking.
Which means I need to get it because if she's read it, she's going to be bugging me about it and be like, have you started
because
it yet?
Because that's your book, lovingly inspired by Let's Scare Jessica to Death, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's what I thought. So I'm like, as somebody
who's... Are you a Jessica fan?
I had a short-lived podcast called Let's Scare Jennifer to Death. Which is just
see a while back, Clay, we had this idea that I would do like the sci-fi speculative stuff and romance on To the Moon Allison, and she would do horror and true crime, so I wouldn't have to over on Let's Scare Jennifer.
And then I just kept booking horror people and onto Vox Vomitus.
And then now it's like I looked at my favorite books from last year and the things that I read, I'm like, all of these are horror. What did you do to me, Jennifer?
I'm sorry. Do I have to show you my pentagram again?
No, you don't. You don't. Seriously. And I feel like I had it in my head, and I'm going to blame my sister again. This is probably why I get back at her by calling her food mud bugs, is that I was very scared of a lot of things. Like I didn't need satanic panic. I had an older sister and she would traumatize me with all sorts of stuff. So I didn't seek out that kind of stuff. And then she would always be on me like, oh, this isn't that scary. But she's also the person who would say like, okay, she knew I was scared of the biggest Muppets on the Muppet Show, and she would tell me to close my eyes. And every time she would tell me to open them before they were gone, like right when they'd come on, I'd open it. Every time I fell for it because I was too dumb to figure out the music cue. So I was like the permanently traumatized child. And then I go and like Jennifer is like, come on, you like it. You like it. I'm like, oh, I do like it. Come on, just read this one.
Like,
oh, this
will be. I'm like, this one won't be bad. This one won't be bad.
Oh man.
No, I love it.
This is a trust thing. I feel like we're getting to a trust.
My sister destroyed mine and Jen's like, building it back.
Building it back. I mean, from day one though, you were like, you remind me so much of my sister. And I'm like, oh, in a good way. And you were like, we'll see.
I just smiled. I'm like, sure.
Sure. I'm like, here, read this Satan book and listen to the Smiths.
Pretty much, yeah. That is my sister.
I knew it was. Clay, we love you. We're going to have you back. Well, you know, honestly, whenever you want to come back. I know you're probably working on something now. Something's going to come out soon.
What's going on with
you? Can we do a little tease before we leave?
It's weird.
It's okay to say you can't do anything.
There's something that is brewing. It is eminently
about to be announced, but you are not allowed to announce
it. Yeah, I feel like
don't say anything.
I feel like the latter half of 2024 something might pop up if you know all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. I'm just waiting.
And it's been a strange year with getting projects.
Yeah.
Too, because there's been a lot of strikes and a lot of. Just a lot of things happening. So, okay, don't tell us anything. Come back after you're allowed to talk about it. I'm not going to tell you anything, but I'm going to just tell you in ASL or just mime talking.
You just be like, mommy.
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 Sorry.
Mr. Icky doesn't like it, or Mr. Yucky.
Oh my God, Mr. Yucky. Oh, the gray boy. I almost just wore all gray today.
the gray boy. I'm wearing a gray shirt underneath. Can I flash?
You can flash. Yeah, gray boy.
Yay! Gray boy.
All right. Keeping it professional as always here on Vox Vomitus with our dog toys and our pentagrams.
Stuffies and snacks.
And snacks. Stuffies, snacks. So we have next week off because we're recording Wednesdays, I'm, you know, literally going to be packing up like a suitcase full of books to be at Christopher Golden's House of Last Resort weekend, which Clay is also going to be at. Really excited.
Everybody hug everybody else for me because
we're gonna hug all the people. Go see. I know Clay's on some panels doing some signings. Come see my panel. If you're there, if not, just fear of missing out. It's gonna be great. And I had to buy a new book from Clay just to have a different one signed because I realized everything I own of yours I already had signed when you were at Gibson's.
So it's like I've already got a things for signage.
And I think my husband was like, that's great. That's one less book that you have to bring. And I'm like, it's okay. Just bought something else.
Aw, that's amazing. These are wonderful problems to have.
I know.
So then the week after, honestly,
we have.
I've got to like look at and do the 10th. So yeah, 14 days.
I know. I'm like, I don't know the date.
Did they add the 24th? We have one of my very, very besties, Frances White, coming to talk about her debut, Voyage of the Damned, which is like everywhere right now. Like all she has, like we're joking, she needs a special bookcase for all of just the special editions just for this book. So
again, good problem to have.
Good problem to have. We're like, what if it rotates and we're trying to figure out
An old comic book rack
where it goes
the spinner rack.
Because you want to see the fancy spines and then the fancy painted edges and all the fancies. But
love it.
Yeah, she's all been trying to order a case
all the fancies.
The actual opening, which is next week, and she's in Nottingham, UK. So I don't get any cake.
You don't get any cake. We'll go.
It's the FOMO here, and I'm not going to House Last Resorts. I don't get any cake. I'm just gonna sit here and eat my crab.
You have crab. You have fake. You have faux crab.
I have faux crab.
All right, everyone who watched it live, who's listening to it on the replay, watching it on the replay, we love you. Stay tuned for what's coming up. Thank you, Clay.
Yay.
Obviously, and
having me
read What Kind of Mother. Read Whisper Down the Lane. Read everything you can by Clay McLeod Chapman because they're all beautiful.
And you're going to be gone, but I'm doing a show next Thursday. So I'll have Noreen Muggies on with The Misarrangement of Santa's Need. So rom-com people, come on back. There will not be any crabs involved, I don't think.